It's 1985 in New York City, and as Pryor and Lewis leave a family funeral, Pryor breaks his devastating news. He lifts his shirt to show his lover the dark mark on his chest, the first sign that he has AIDS. The diagnosis tears the couple apart and throws them into contact with a closeted Mormon, a hypocritical lawyer, a pill-popping housewife, even a celestial being or two. Angels in America is an epic theatrical story, told in two parts over more than 7 hours. So it's a brave independent company to take on this theatrical juggernaut. The play is being staged in Melbourne by Dirty Pretty Theatre. I saw it on the weekend and I'm so pleased to have the director Gary Abrahams and actors Simon Caulfield and Caleb Alloway here to talk about it. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Gary, for those who haven't seen Tony Kushner's play, or maybe that HBO series that was on not too long ago, maybe we can start by just running through some of the plot basics. We start by meeting this couple, Pryor and Lewis. What's going on with these guys?
Well, Pryor and Lewis have been together for about 4.5 years. As you say, it's New York, 1985. You know, it's a bit of a mecca of the, you know, the sort of gay rights movement at the time in 1985, New York and San Francisco. Of course, this is just at the beginning of the massive AIDS epidemic that would have decimated communities, particularly in New York and San Francisco. We meet them there, as you've just described in your opening. You know, that's the first time we meet them in that scene. And then for the next sort of 6 hours of theatrical time, you kind of follow their story as it intersects with lots of other stories, including that of Roy Cohn, who you alluded to.
Yes, the lawyer, who we might come back to a little bit later, yeah. But I want to talk about another couple of characters in the show. There's a key couple at the centre of this story, Joe and Hannah. Now, Caleb, you play Joe, this Mormon legal clerk. Maybe you can tell me a bit about him and this couple.
So he's married to Harper, Hannah's his mum.
My apologies.
Yeah, that's all right. Joe's a Mormon. He's the chief clerk of the Chief Justice at the Supreme Court, for the Chief Justice. He is struggling with his wife, who's addicted to pills, to Valium. He, at the top of the play, is offered an incredible opportunity to go to Washington. And then laid under all of that is he's struggling with his sexuality. And eventually he meets somebody, Lewis, and has the opportunity to jump into being in a relationship with a man for the first time ever.
And what comes after that? Now, let's go to that scene where we meet the two of you, Simon and Caleb, in your roles. You've prepared this scene for us. Joe and Lewis meet in a bathroom. Lewis has just found out his partner's been diagnosed with AIDS. Maybe you can do a little bit of that for us. Oh, and one I meant to mention, we do have a language warning here, I believe,
yes.
Right? Oh, you're just getting into character too.
I was just about to cry. Made me laugh instead.
All right, well, let's go into that now. Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning, counselor.
Sorry, I don't know your name.
Don't bother. Word processor. The lowest of the low.
Joe Pitt. I'm with Justice Wilson.
Oh, I know that. Counselor Pitt, chief clerk.
Are you okay?
Yeah, thanks. What a nice man.
Oh, not so nice.
What?
Not so nice. Forget it. Are you
Life
sure?
Life sucks shit. Life just sucks shit.
What's wrong?
Running my nylons.
Sorry?
Forget it. Look, thanks for asking.
Well.
I mean, it really is nice of you. Sorry. Sorry, sick friend.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's sweet. Three of your colleagues preceded you to this baleful sight, and you're the first one to ask. The others just opened the door, saw me, and fled. I hope they had to pee real bad.
Oh, they just didn't want to intrude.
Ha! Reaganite, heartless, macho asshole lawyers.
Oh, that's unfair.
What is? Heartless? Macho? Reaganite? Lawyer?
I voted for Reagan.
You did?
Twice.
Twice? Well, oh boy, a gay Republican.
Excuse me?
Nothing.
I'm not... Forget it.
Republican, not Republican, or...
What?
What?
Not gay. I'm not gay.
Oh, sorry. It's just...
Yes?
Well, sometimes you can tell from the way a person sounds. I mean, you sound like
No, I don't. Like what?
Like a Republican.
Do I? Sound like a...
What? Like a Republican or do I?
Do you what?
Sound like a...
Like a... I'm confused.
Yes. My name is Louis, but all my friends call me Louise. I work in word processing. Thanks for the toilet paper.
Simon Caulfield and Caleb Alloway performing a scene there from the new production of Angels in America, which is being staged by Dirty Pretty Theatre. What I love about this show is it's dealing with these big issues, but it's really funny. Like, that's what you hear in that scene. Now, Simon, your partner, Lewis, we know he loves his partner. He's devastated Yes. about this news, but he does abandon him, you know, in his hour of need when he gets sick. How did you go about figuring out this character and justifying his actions?
It's quite interesting when you start doing the research on the play and the past productions and reading comments from people throughout the world of their opinions on this character. He's considered a villain.
Really?
Yeah. People hate him and they think he's a coward and a horrible, horrible man. And of course, you know, as an actor, you go in and you never want to judge your own character. You want to find out why and wherefore and, you know, how they've managed to end up in the situation that they're in. I think with Lewis, you've got to remember that they've been together for 4.5 years, him and Pryor, and that there is a strong love between them too. And it's this particular thing of AIDS coming between them that he cannot handle. It's the thing of, you know, when the big things come into your life and you think you're going to be able to go head on against them and conquer, and actually it makes you run instead. And so I feel like, you know, we've all got experiences of that throughout our lives, whether they're as big as something as AIDS or something even small can do it between partners, that, you know, you start from there of that he's not a bad person. He just doesn't know how to deal with the situation he's been dealt.
You never want to see someone you love get sick and, exactly. go through that. And this disease really...
Yeah, and in that time in 1985, people were literally dropping dead in the street. And, like, there was no care. It was still blanketed and not being spoken about by the government. And, you know, it was a... You just couldn't get the help that you needed. And... We talked about it a lot about how they were in that world. Like, Pryor was in the drag queen world and very much in the club culture world of New York, and they would be seeing their friends just dropping off one by one. And to know what is coming for Lewis is just like horrific, and that thing of like, I cannot even go there.
You talked about the government and the role it played. Politics is this big theme which comes up in Angels in America. We heard even in that scene Caleb's character talking about, you know, are you a Republican?
Yeah.
Gary, maybe you can talk to me about this. How does politics weave itself through this production?
Well, this is one of the reasons why I was so keen to do this production now. I think one of the themes that the play deals with a lot is time and sort of politics, and this idea that progress as a society is something that's linear, that's always moving us forward. And actually, you know, if you think about it, what we see is that it often spirals backwards and it's cyclical. And when this play was written 25 years ago, you know, that was at the height of the Reagan administration, and very, very conservative politics within America. And the play ends on a very hopeful note, and I felt like, you know, over the past couple of decades, there was this really interesting swing to the left. And now, of course, particularly in America, but here in Australia as well, we see a major swing back to very conservative politics. And that's why it felt very kind of pertinent to put this play on now. I mean, I think anyone watching it now would be kind of stunned at how topical it is. I mean, it could have been written yesterday.
It was amazing sitting in the audience and thinking this was written in, what, 1991, and the themes they're talking about are, there's talk about climate change, there's talk about migration, there's talk about conservatism, there's talk about gay rights, all these issues. You're sitting there going, was this guy prophetic or what was going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does feel very prophetic. And of course, you know, religion plays a big part in the story as well. You kind of have these really extraordinary links to one of the world's oldest religions, which is Judaism. The play begins with this beautiful sort of opening monologue by a rabbi who Helen Morse plays. And then, you have these Mormon characters, and that's one of the world's newest religions. And I think there's this really kind of purposeful link between the old and the new that Kushner's playing with. And of course, within Mormonism, you have that religion begun by a man in the late 1800s who had a visitation from an angel. And of course, Pryor, the protagonist of Angels, has a visitation from an angel. So
there are some really weird things that happen in this show. You know, we have an angel crash through the ceiling. We have characters meet each other in hallucinations. We go to heaven. What is the playwright trying to do here? Why do we have all these strange kind of otherworldly elements happening in what could be a straightforward story about a couple of couples and the impact of disease on them?
I mean, I think that's why this play, people love this play so much. And I think particularly people who love poetry, literature and theatre love this play because of how Tony Kushner plays with form. It's definitely one of the things that attracted me to the play when I first discovered it as a young man. And, you know, theatre is a place of imagination and magic. And I love the way that Tony Kushner can lure you into a very naturalistic, realistic relationship and scene and then whack you over the head with something very magical and surreal. And I think he's constantly exploring this idea of stasis versus flux and the way that, you know, things are breaking open. I mean, perestroika is the second part of the play. The first part is millennium approaches. And there is this sort of supernatural, mystical quality to it. I think he, very much plays with that and how stories are interlinked and histories are interwoven and none of us are separate. We're all made of star stuff and all of our stories are linked in some way, you know. And so politics can never be separate. Your politics and my politics have to sort of interweave and intertwine.
Yeah, and that's what this play does. It brings all these different ideas together and kind of sees what sticks. It's clear you really love this play. You mentioned you read it when you were quite young. How did you come across it?
Well, I grew up in South Africa in Johannesburg, and this was during the height of apartheid, so we had a lot of sanctions against us. So we didn't get a lot of stuff from overseas. I was 17 years old in a bookstore, and I kind of just pulled it off a shelf and read it. And there were many things that sort of struck me as a young gay man. This was the first time I'd ever read or seen a depiction of gay characters that weren't the butt of the joke, that were actually the central protagonists of their own story, which was really beautiful. And then as a theatre maker, it was incredibly influential because of the dramaturgy of the play and sort of reading how Tony Kushner wrote his scenes and weaved his scenes, and particularly, as you will have experienced, the way he can have multiple scenes playing at the same time. I was just really struck and taken, and it's been a big influence on me in my life.
How fantastic. I think about you reading that play and reading stage directions and ideas like an angel crashes through the ceiling, we're now in Antarctica and it's snowing, we're now moving into heaven. And when I look at that, I think of a big main stage show. I'm thinking a proscenium arch. I'm thinking the ability to fly things on and off the stage. You're doing this in an independent, with an independent company, a small budget, and you're doing it in 45 downstairs in Melbourne, which is almost kind of like a little empty warehouse underground. How intimidating is that prospect to do a show of this scope in that type of space?
Not intimidating at all, just really exciting, because when this play was first done, when it was first produced in 1990 or 1991 in San Francisco, it was done in a tiny little 99-seat theatre. Because of the sort of mythical status of the play now, it's done by big companies, you know, who can do it all, and these very kind of clean versions. But I was really excited to bring a production to Melbourne that would speak to Melbourne audiences. Melbourne has an incredibly, invigorating independent theatre scene, and it's very inventive on a small budget. I think people make magical things happen. 45 Downstairs felt like the perfect venue for it because it feels like you're in a New York, warehouse or a New York loft, even though we're underground. And I was also really inspired by a documentary called Paris is Burning.
I had a look at it, yeah.
And it was, this movement. I mean, RuPaul, for the some people may be familiar with RuPaul and RuPaul's Drag Race. This is where that whole movement began. Very kind of lower socioeconomic class of gay New Yorkers who would kind of put on these balls. They had no money, but they created magic. You know, they could create snow out of styrofoam and, all sorts of wonderful things. And so I really kind of took that as my cue as to how we were going to realize the magic of the show. So we do have snow. You know, we do have a lot of high spectacle in the show. And I think what we've managed to achieve in a very kind of inventive way on an independent budget is really kind of wonderful and part of the joy of coming to the show.
Yeah, I guess you're there so close as an audience member. You're right apart, really a part of it, which is great. Simon, I wondered about the challenge of this for an actor. You've put this together in a short time frame, but also this show goes for 7.5 hours. Even sitting in the audience, that required strength. How do you get through this show?
It's kind of like a time warp. You just enter and you come out the other side. You just keep going. Once you get on that train, it doesn't stop. And it's actually really exciting, especially over the weekends where you get to do both parts in succession. So you get the full journey as an actor from start to finish, compared to like during the week where we're doing in rep each night. And at first, we were all like going, oh my God, how are we going to survive this? Because we're locked in the theatre for about 17 hours, over 48 hours doing the show. It's huge, but it's utterly exciting and thrilling and wonderful to be able to do that. When do you ever get to do that?
And I do want to sort of jump in and say that for people who think you're coming to see the show, you know, not to be sort of put off by that running time, because firstly, if you come and see it all in one go on a Saturday or Sunday, there's a lot of intervals. There's an hour and a half sort of dinner break. You know, it is a sort of whole day, but you're not kind of trapped in your seat for 7.5 hours. But you do also have the option of coming to both parts separately. And it's really just two plays long. You know, it's not that.
People binge TV shows for longer than that.
Absolutely. And there's a real experience that you come on when you spend that amount of time with a group of characters, and people are very, the journey that you kind of go on is quite immense.
Caleb, I wonder if you can talk to me about that. Do you have any tips for an actor to get through 7.5 hours of theatre?
I'm learning myself, to be honest. This is a massive experience for me. It's the biggest show I've ever done. I've only done a few things in theatre. So I'm learning from pros like Simon, Gary, Helen Morse, Brian. I think the biggest thing for me is just telling the story, remembering the story. I had to do that last night. We were talking about there was a show stop last night and having to stop the show and then go back into a scene. It was great practice for me to have to just think about where am I in the story and what have I got to tell?
Fantastic. Well, look, this show was such an experience. It was amazing to sit in the room in this small space and hear this story, small and big. So thank you to all of you. Gary Abrahams is the director of Angels in America. Caleb Alloway and Simon Caulfield are two of the actors. And the show is at 45 Downstairs in Melbourne until the 24th of September. Now, you can see parts one or two separately through the week, as Gary said, or you can do the whole thing in one go on the weekend. That's what I did, and if you do, my big tip is to bring a cushion to sit on. You will not regret it.